Happy Holy Day to you, indeed. I just want to comment on all the beautiful things up here in front. Work of art. Appreciate that. Thank you much for it, whoever did that. There is just a couple of things I want to mention before I get started. Service this afternoon will start at 2 instead of 2:30, as typical on Sabbath. There, you can stay here for lunch or go out. That is your choice. Also, I'd just like to mention request your prayer for Mr. Dawson. He'll be flying home shortly. He'll arrive here about 9:30 tomorrow evening. So he's probably on his way to the airport right now, maybe. I don't know. Not sure. Anyway, he'll be welcome back, that's for sure. Well, as you know, brethren, as you have heard, today is April 17th, 2017. It's also the 21st day of the first month of the sacred calendar. And it also happens to be the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread for this year. Just to cover the basis, let's go back to Exodus 12. And this is the reason why we're here today. Verse 18. In the first month, that's this month of the sacred calendar, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day, which is today actually, of the month at evening. We wrap it up today. We've eaten bread now for 7 full days. Why do we do this? Well, the main reason is because God tells us to. Because he wants to point out certain things to us. They reveal aspects about his overall plan for us, for all of mankind, that we need to know about it. And there's important lessons contained in them for us to learn during these days. As we've heard in the first message, there are, and we have, important things to do as members of this church, as members of God's family. The intent of this message is to highlight some of those things, bring out their importance, so that we understand their significance. And we will understand that by observing these days, obeying God in what we are doing, we become a sign unto ourselves, to God, and to this world by what we're doing. We are carrying out, we are accomplishing our mission. The church has a goal, the church has a mission directed and guided by God himself. And that's what we are doing. The majority of the world now, if they knew what we were doing today or this last week, they would probably laugh. But they don't understand. They don't know. And we will have the last say in the matter when the time comes. Because what we are doing is really God's will. They just don't know it. What God's will dictates is what's going to happen in spite of any man's goals or the feeble efforts to save themselves. But this message today is going to be forward-looking. There's some serious concerns of what the future might hold. And as usual, there are lessons in the Old Testament that apply in 2017 for us today. I'm going to go through one of those events, learn the lessons from them, and I've entitled this The Rod of God. That's his title. Let's pick it up, this story in Exodus 13. Get the page over here in my Bible anyway. Exodus 13, and we're going to start looking at verses 7 and 9. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among all you in your quarters. And you shall tell your sons in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be a sign to you on your hand, and as a memorial between your eyes at the Lord's law. Notice that. That the Lord's law might be in your mouth. For with a strong hand, the Lord has brought you up from the land of Egypt. Now, what does he mean, put your law in your mouth? What's that all about? Well, that word law in that verse is not really speaking about the Ten Commandments per se. That word is Torah. That means Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy. All five books of the Torah, not just the Ten Commandments. So, all of this is instructional for us today. Now, what about this sign on our hands, a memorial between our eyes? You know, commentaries say that even some modern Israelites still do this, and they look upon it as a precept that a justification for the use of their phylacteries and writing little scripts of law and pasting them on their foreheads or as a physical reminder. Well, that really, they did it back then because they're not living it at the time. They were a shadow of things to come. We are living it. God focuses on the spiritual intent, not just the physical matters. These days are picturing putting sin out, not glorying in our little phylacteries or little boxes, actually, the Israelites put it on in Jerusalem on their heads. Putting sin out, that's what counts to God, and he puts the spiritual emphasis on the spiritual things. But take note also that these days are called a sign and a memorial. Those are spiritual things, not physical. That's important, but let's look at another event here previous to this one. We understand how Moses fled Egypt. Turn back to Exodus 3, if you would please. Moses fled Egypt and became a shepherd in Midian. And he was out, I suppose, walking one day, tending to his sheep maybe, but he looks up on the side of this mountain, there's a bush on fire. Bushes on fire are supposed to burn up. This bush was not burning up. Exodus 3 and verse 3. So Moses said, I'm going up and take a look at this thing. I will now turn aside and see this great sight. Exodus 3 verse 3. Why the bush does not burn. And during this encounter with God, he learns that God is sending him back to Egypt to deliver his people. All those that sought his life were dead. So now he's going back. But in lack of faith here, he balks at it. I can't do this. They're not going to listen to me. Send somebody else. Why me, Lord, so to speak. Exodus 4:1. Then Moses answered and said, but suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, the Lord has not appeared to you. So the Lord said to him in verse 2, what's that in your hand? And he said, a rod. God tells him to throw it on the ground, and the rod becomes a snake. We know the story. So then God tells him to pick the snake up by the tail, and he does, and it becomes a rod again. That was to be a sign that he could carry with him and use to show that indeed Moses was a chosen vessel of God, and he's here to do a mission. Now, this rod is just a long stick of wood. Shepherds use that to kind of steer the sheep around and guide and control them, which is a very fitting example of what God is doing with us even today. Verse 19, Exodus 4, verse 19. So God sends him back to Israel, verse 19. And the Lord said to Moses in Midian, go, return to Egypt, for all the men who sought your life are dead. Then Moses took his wife and sons and set them on a donkey, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. That's the first time that this staff was referred to as the rod of God. During the plague seasons in Egypt, both Moses and Aaron used this rod when they did miracles before the Egyptian people and even Pharaoh himself. Let's turn to Exodus 17. Exodus 17 and verse 3. This happened a little bit later after they left. This rod was still in play at that time. Moses took it with him and was still using it. Exodus 17, verse 3, and the people thirsted there for water and complained against Moses and said, why is it you have brought us out of Egypt to kill us and your children with our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with the people? They're almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river. Talking about this rod of God, same thing. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb. You shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it so the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders. So, Moses still had this rod. He was still using it as a sign from God and performing miracles with it. Now, shortly after this event, there was another time when God used this rod, or Moses actually used it, for a godly purpose. This is when the Israelites really had their first battle with the Amalekite people. This was way before they entered the Promised Land even. Same book. Exodus 17, now we're looking starting in verse 8. Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose us some men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him, and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. So here you might see a valley down there where the battle is going on. Moses and Hur and Aaron are sitting on top of this mountain, looking down, watching all that's going on. Verse 12. Let's back up here to verse 10. I read that verse 11. And so it was, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. When he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. Isn't that curious? God was determining the outcome of the battle, whether that rod was up in the air or he got down. The rod had significance, big significance. Turning the battle one way or another. But, verse 12, Moses' hand became heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. Have you ever tried to hold your hands above your head for half an hour? I don't think you can do it. Boy, they get tired in a hurry. Your muscles start to cramp and it hurts. I don't know why that is, but it's hard to do for any period of time. And it's fascinating to me that God fought for his people while Moses' hand was up. When Moses tired, and well, the battle turned. The Amalek started to win. So, here's what happened. Aaron on one side, Hur on the other, propped his hands up and kept that rod up the air, and the battle was won. Interesting. Due to his physical weakness, He dropped his arms, and God didn't help him. Unless Moses was supported by additional people to help him keep his arms up. And therein lies the lessons for us today. God's work, as we heard, has a mission to accomplish, and we are doing it. We're facing many challenges, rising costs, rising hostility towards God-fearing people, social issues that we do not agree with are coming to the forefront. Some churches and Christians are being called on the carpet for it. Not a pretty scene. Our church has to fight that, face that, as we do, as God's people. Another big issue concerning the church right now is the aging ministry. There is no secret. We all know it's there, and it's a big problem. Our ministers are overworked, thin. And what would happen without the faithful support of the church membership? There would be no organized church. We wouldn't have a mission to accomplish. We couldn't do anything without an organized church doing the witness, putting out a magazine, doing what we do, which is God's will. We look back and see some of our old friends that have been on the wayside for years, left over from a previous association, starting to come back. A few people, new ones, are being called. But there are very many who are becoming very conscious of a tribulation coming. They can read between the lines. They've heard enough and know what's coming. They can just, they're starting to feel very uneasy about what the future is holding, because they know some big things are about to happen. In essence, brethren, the fields are white for harvest. But boy, we need some able-bodied men to step in, because there may be a rush coming, and we've got to get ready and prepared for it. Many men are retiring, health issues are coming up, and we need to increase our ministry, not let it drop out. What happens when our ministry drop their hand because they're overworked and they're tired and they're thin? They need a strong support on either side holding up their hands and supporting them. That's why we are here. The majority of the congregation is not called to be a leader. For one, I'm very thankful for that. That's way above my pay grade and ability to cope with anything like that. But each and every one of us is called to support the church and the work that is being done to accomplish the mission that has to be done. It's not a time to let down. There's never a time to quit, to leave, to ask others to carry on, because I'm just getting too tired. I'm too old. I can't do anything. No. There is no age limit on service. There is no age limit on effective prayer. Mm-mm. We all could be doing more, but it seems like sometimes we're doing more than what's expected. But there has to be a balance in what we are doing, what we can do, and that this should be construed in any way that I'm saying any of us should be doing more. From what I see, there's a whole lot being done. But our job primarily is to support the hands of those in charge. That's why we're here. When we let down, the work suffers. Yet this is God's work. He's the one that's going to make anything happen. He's the one that turns the tide. He's the one that accomplishes things. But He wants us involved in it as participants, as those expected from a family. When there's trouble in a family, the family pulls together. We get the job done. In Jesus' own words, He does not put something on us that we can't do. It's not a heavy task. Let's turn to Matthew 11. I think it'd be comforting to put this in context here. Matthew 11. We're not alone, neither should we be overburdened. Matthew 11, verse 28. Come to me, all you who are labor and heavy laden. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. I think we make it harder on ourselves sometimes than what it should be. God does not want us stressed out. God does not want us to be overburdened. That's not in His interest or ours. God shows He's not an oppressive slave master. He's loving, gentle, long-suffering toward us. And as we seek His favor, we will find the peace regardless of the circumstances. Paul hammered that one home very strongly in some of his messages. Committing to God, the one doing what He says, is committing to do God's will. We obey, we follow through in what we're supposed to do. And it is His will to give this world a witness before the end time comes. It is the church as a whole that carries out that task. Very little we can do on an individual basis to reach the world, but the church can. It's coordinated by efforts of our leaders and supported by the members. And that's how this work is conducted. I think we're all aware that there's a council meeting coming up shortly. And in looking ahead, we've been asked to pray for that in advance. That won't be happening next Sabbath. Important decisions have to be made. Perhaps some changes have to be made. We need God's direct intervention and guidance for these things to come about and to happen so that we can do the work, accomplish the mission that we've been given to do. That's a major reason for this fact that's being called in preparation for that. God wants His whole church involved in this work and what's going on. There can be no physical work we can do that would be more important or effective than to seek God's favor and His blessing during a fast day for the work. That's one of the most important things we can be doing, with results, with effect and impact on the work. It was God who fought the Israelites one way or another, depending on Moses' rod. It's our job now to hold our leader's hands up. That example was a lesson for us today. Coming out of Egypt, as we've heard over and over, is parallel to coming out of sin. And one way to do that is really to have our focus forward looking, as we've heard as well. Focused on this work and what needs to be done to do and to finish and accomplish our mission. Pushing this world out of our thoughts is a way of pushing sin out as well. And focusing on work, on what the work is doing, is a good way to exercise that. It was Moses' choice to use his rod before God had told him, take your rod with you and you can use that. This was Moses' choice in this last time with the battle of Amalek. That was Moses' choice. I'm going to take my rod with me. That rod was given to him because of Moses' lack of faith to begin with. So God gave him a crutch. And we can see Moses maturing here. This was the last time that that rod was ever used in God's service. We outgrow the need for a crutch. We live by faith. We work by faith. We accomplish things by faith. God did not tell him to use it at that time. But God honored it, controlling the battle, because of where that rod is up or down. We don't need physical objects, a rod or anything else, to use in our service to God. If we do, there's a lack of faith there someplace. It is our faith that accomplishes things, the faith in God who is controlling all things. There's important work being done, and it's going to be done without a rod. But we do support this work through our prayers, intercessory prayers specifically for the work's needs, whatever the need might be. The rod, we don't have faith in a rod. We have faith in the knowledge of what we know is coming. We have faith in the words of this book. We have faith in the church and the mission behind it, what we are accomplishing. God will bless our efforts through prayer, not through a rod. A short time ago, oh my God, it's been not more than a short time. Some time ago, quite a while ago, I gave a sermon on how we can specifically help the work. And I'm now going to spend the rest of my time reiterating some of those specific points of how we best can put this class to work. And how we can petition God for prayer. The first point is to pray for effectiveness. That's what the main thing that we've got to be doing. Praying for effectiveness. Now that means to be doing the things that really work. Not being around the bush, not a heavy work on something that doesn't accomplish things, but to be effective in what we are doing, something that has good results from it. Put that at the top of the list. We need to be effective. The second point, pray that we can do it efficiently. Costs are not cheap. Printing is not cheap. Travel is not cheap. We need to do things efficiently, not wasting time, not wasting resources, making the most with what we have to make with, and being efficient about it. The next thing is to do it economically. Now, the first two will help in the economics, being effective and efficiently, but economically means to be this way in how God opens doors for us. He can make things happen more efficiently. He can give us breaks. He can give us favor. He can give us means to do something that we would not have the ability to do otherwise. That has happened so many times. This work wouldn't exist without all those favors, the economic favors that come along. Printing costs, just freedom from accidents and illnesses would help too. We got many things to pray for that can be effective and efficient and economical. The next thing that we need to be focusing on and praying for is an expansion of the work. We are doing a significant job, but we need to expand what we are doing in scope and in power. We're given a witness, but we're supposed to grow, be more effective, more efficient in what we are doing. The harvest is white out there. It really is. If you start talking to people and understanding what the mindset is out there, people are looking. But we need more able-bodied men to shepherd the flock. And we need more flock to shepherd the work. It has to come that way. There's also a sense of urgency because many people know time is running out. So many things are coming. Now, we may have decades to go. I'm not saying that it's going to happen next week. No, it won't. We do not know the exact time. But guess what? Our ticker is ticking away. We aren't guaranteed tomorrow, yet alone a decade or so. It is our work that we are accomplishing here, as well as God's work, regardless of what happens in this world. Brother, we, as God's people, are some of the most blessed people on the face of the earth. We look at places that are going through famines, earthquakes, dictators, brutal actions from groups of people. We are spared from most of that, being in America. God gave us America a big blessing by creating this nation. Our physical needs pale to comparison to those of others around the world. We are most blessed. We fast, but you know, a fast only lasts for 24 hours. It's a little discomfort. It doesn't last long. And it's expected of us to do a little bit of sacrifice for this work. You know, and really, any calories lost, we can make up for that later. Don't let that stop you. No, that's not the thing. The rod of God had its purpose in this day, and it was used and it was effective. But it's the prayers of our faithful members today that's going to get this work done. We have a greater purpose, a witness that leads God's direction and blessing, and He wants us fully engaged in that, and that is a good way for us to be involved and engaged and make a difference in what the work is doing. We make a difference. Many people want to do that in the world. They don't know how. They spend their lifetime trying to make a difference, not understanding that their life's temporary. We know better. So, brethren, pray hard, fast willingly, and have a wonderful rest of this day. The message coming later. And I guess there's a potluck or somewhat, or eat here, whatever you want to do, and go out. It's up to you. So, have a wonderful day.